From 90.1 WFYI Public Radio, welcome to The Art of the Matter, made possible by the ongoing support of listeners like you and from the Palladium at the Center for the Performing Arts, presenting its inaugural season through June.
Hello and welcome to The Art of the Matter. I'm Travis DiNicola. The music for today's show is courtesy of the Baselli Walrab Jazz Orchestra from their Heart and Soul album, available through Owl Studios at owlstudios.com.
And I'm Sharon Gamble. Today I'll get a preview of a local production of Disney's Camp Rock the Musical.
I'll chat with author Tracy Seeley about her new memoir and book tour.
Then I'll find out what you can expect at Clues Memorial Hall in the new season. And there's our arts calendar we call
What do we do? All that and more right after the latest news from NPR. Bob Harbin's company, Bob Directs, kicks off its 2011 season with a youth production of Disney's Camp Rock the Musical from July 1st through the 16th at the Athenaeum Theater. He dropped in to talk with Sharon about the production and why he loves directing teens.
You know what's exciting in this city of Indianapolis? We have this summer two shows that are like premieres. And I'm so excited because, you know, I love that Brian over at Phoenix. They're premiering Avenue Q, which is, the road show's been through, but it's the first time that it's an Indianapolis production of that show, which is amazing. And then we have Camp Rock, Disney's Camp Rock the Musical, which is the first time ever. There's been no road show. There's been no nothing. So we are the Midwest, not just Indiana.
Cool.
We are the Midwest premiere. The Disney company, being very smart and economically sound, after they did the High School Musical movies, of which there were three, they put together a stage show, which we did, 4 years ago, 5 years ago. And
has it been that long? Wow, that was fast.
Yeah, go figure. and it was a premiere for the Midwest at that time, too. They since, in the past couple of years, have done a show on their network called Camp Rock. And then they followed that with a sequel called Camp Rock the Final Jam. They decided to combine the two and make Camp Rock the Musical, which is a live stage show version of a compilation of those two films.
It's based
more on the second part because it's a meatier, juicier, more fun story. But they've taken the music from both. And, you know, I'm amazed that even at my 60 years, and that's when you should have said, you can't be that old. No. even at my 60 years,
I find it fascinating
that this music is so catchy. It's so toe-tapping, you know. I go away from rehearsal, you know, with a song in my head.
You know, I've been thinking a lot about that lately since I work. My day job is at the Phoenix Theater, and Avenue Q, you would think that it's mostly 20-somethings, early 30s who want to see it. But I cannot tell you the number of ticket orders we've taken from seniors, people far older than you, Mr. Harbin. but you know, that's the secret that nobody tells you when you're a kid, is that you are a kid for as long as you think you are.
Oh, absolutely.
And new music keeps speaking to people.
Absolutely.
Long after maybe they've aged out of what the radio arbitrons say they should be listening to.
And there's a love story here, and there are, you know, villains and a happy ending, because
but some tension about whether you'll get to the happy
absolutely.
Ending.
Absolutely, and it doesn't come right to the very end. So, it's really fun stuff. We've got 26 kids, as young as 12, in the cast. Probably a good handful or two who've never done anything on stage before in their lives.
So talk to me about the audition process.
Sure. For the first time, I did posters, and rather than the usual, put them in Starbucks, put them in, you know, where.
Yeah.
I put them up in high schools.
Well, sure.
So I asked the choir directors and the drama teachers if they would mind posting this audition notice where it can be seen by their students. And it, stupid me, why didn't you think of this before? We had a wonderful turnout from all different high schools all over town. And I really didn't stipulate an age because it's a camp. So you could be going there, you know,
you could
as
be 12 or you could be 18.
Middle school person, yeah. or you know, just entered college, something. And we got, you know, a wonderful outturning of these amazing kids. Some are amazing vocal kids and can barely dance a lick. There are a couple that are amazing dancers and they'll be singing softly.
They'll be doing they'll be doing the Richard Burton version of Camelot, where
exactly.
You kind of talk through the song.
They'll be the ones without the head mics.
Yeah.
And they come together, and this is the part about doing a youth-oriented musical I love the best. They're from all different economic backgrounds. They're from all different, you know, locations here in different high schools. And when you come together and you sing together, you dance together, yeah, and you tell some jokes and have some fun together, the bonding that occurs with these kids is incredible. I mean, they're there for each other. They're helping each other with dances that, you know, one is having a problem with. They're getting together outside of rehearsal to learn some of the songs and things.
You've created a new family.
Yes, and they're it's a wonderful family to be a part of. I feel very fortunate.
You like to work with kids. You have a long history of working with kids.
Yeah.
What do you like about it?
They're still impressionable. They're still looking.
They're not jaded.
No, not you know some, but as we get older, I'm one of those Disney kids that chose not to grow up. I'm a bit of a Peter Pan, I suppose. But I think that they're still willing to trust. They're still willing to look into someone's eyes and try to tell if that person's being genuine with them or not.
Mm.
I think they respect someone who's trying to help them. And sometimes when we get older, we may still have some of those feelings, but we've buried them or covered them over with so many different layers of protection that it's harder to let that happen.
Hmm.
We're too safe sometimes.
Yeah. We lost as a community your longtime collaborator, John Austin Butch, who was senselessly murdered this spring. You have to be thinking a lot about him in this process.
Yes. The last thing that John and I did was cast this show.
Hmm.
And true to himself, even at that last audition, still helping. Oh, I'm so moved by it that we had a very young auditioner who wasn't sure of her song or of herself.
Hmm.
And she gave John the music and started singing, and he just, stop, honey, I need to give you a new key. You need to try this. And he immediately transposed the music in his head right there for her, and she sang it much better than before and left that stage feeling so proud of herself, proud of what she had been able to do. And for John, it was just, you know, one more, that's what I do.
Yeah.
So I talked to the cast, and we all decided that this will be a time for John. This will be a dedication to him, and they all had the opportunity to meet him at least once, mm-hmm. you know, at auditions. Some of them have worked, you know, with him before. And so that's part of the reason that we're continuing to do this. And maybe that's one of the blessings. Maybe that's also one of the reasons that we're so close. We have a second reason to be doing this other than something that might pertain just to us.
Right. It's something bigger.
Yeah. Yeah.
What What is the rehearsal process like? Do you have all the kids there every night? Do you break it up into scenes and just call and work deeply on one scene each night or a couple scenes each night?
If you've ever acted, you know how frustrating it is to be called to a rehearsal at 6 or 7 o'clock and go home without being used.
Right.
Or go home after they've used you at 10 till 10. For a couple minutes.
And that's especially tricky with kids, the younger ones of whom have to get a ride there by mom or dad
or a friend. Plus, these kids are amazingly talented, so they're also doing choir and soccer and track and field. And you should see the conflicts.
I can't. I'm trying to imagine the scheduling challenge of this.
So what we do is we get together for a night and we sing. And we learn as many songs as we can, and we have singing rehearsals, and it's all just about getting together and learning these songs. If you're not in them, you're asked to come later. I really don't want to abuse anyone's time or energy. Then we have dancing rehearsals, and same thing. There's a couple characters that aren't involved, and like four of the dancers, so they stay home and they get a night off, and everyone else dances. And this week, tomorrow, as a matter of fact, we will be doing some blocking. So I will try to move 26 people around. I'm going to be 73 tomorrow.
Gee, funny how a few minutes ago we were doubting that you were 60.
It's funny when you get all these parts, and they all learn them, and then the last couple of weeks, it all starts to move together, and you see lots of light bulbs going up. Oh,
I see how this fits into the
whole. That's why he had me do it this way. Because I think if you just try to start at the beginning and go straight through, it would be a wonderful thing. But it would be impossible with their conflicts and scheduling and such. So, you work it this way, and I figured out last night that our whole cast will not have been together as a whole cast until June 19th. So it's...
And you open...
July 1st.
I was going to say, that's pretty quick turnaround.
Yeah.
Yipes.
It'll work.
Do you have access to the space for your rehearsals the whole time, or do you have to move rehearsal from
somewhere
else?
We're all over the place.
Yeah.
Because, the company's a not-for-profit, and we don't have a home. If you have a theater out there, anyone, and you're desperately need for, we really love to have him and do all his shows here. Our wonderful vocal coach is the vocal director at Manual High School. So we rehearse sometimes, with him at Spencer Lloyd. You may have read about him
in the
Indianapolis Star from Matthew Tully. So we're working some over there. We're working, the YMCA is lending us some space. We've come to my house, and my bulldog Pearl joins in the, she's become
she
one of the cast
up.
Members. And we go wherever we can, best afford to go. And then graciously the Athenaeum lets us in a week before we open so that we do have time to be in our space and get used to the actual theater itself.
Bob Harbin with Sharon Gamble. See teens from around the city in Disney's Camp Rock the Musical from July 1st through the 16th at the Athenaeum Theater. You can get more information and tickets at bobdirex.com. Let me spell that for you. It's Bob, B-O-B, then Direx, D-I-R-E-X.com. B-O-B-D-I-R-E-X.com.
You're listening to The Art of the Matter on WFYI 90.1 FM Public Radio. Sure, there's no place like home, but what if you can't really pinpoint where home is? By the time she was 9, Tracy Seeley, a professor of English at the University of San Francisco, had lived in 7 towns and 13 different houses. Her memoir, My Ruby Slippers, tells of her search to find the meaning of home. Travis DiNicola spoke with her by phone.
You're in Montana right now. I'm not sure if it's ironic or appropriate that here we are talking about a book that's sort of about, finding and rediscovering place and trying to define home, and you're traveling while we're doing that.
That's right. It cracks me up. My book, My Ruby Slippers, is really about my own sense of not having a sense of place growing up, mm-hmm. and because my parents moved so often, I really find the idea of being home, being rooted, not moving around, extremely attractive, and I prefer that. So so now I'm on a 10-week book tour throughout the western part of the U.S., so it's extremely ironic.
Yeah, just a continuation of it. And you're not even, if I'm right, you're not even living in San Francisco where you work anymore. You're living in L.A. now, so even more sort of a displacement there?
When I finished the book, I was living in L.A. part-time. My husband is a filmmaker, and mm-hmm. we decided we would move to L.A. one year when I was on sabbatical just to see how it would work out for him. And then the 2 years after that, I commuted back and forth to my job in San Francisco. So also very ironic,
yeah.
while I was working on a book about wanting to stay in place. But now we left L.A., and I've been living in Oakland, California, just across the bay from San Francisco, where I work.
You know, when I first heard your book described and the sense of you know, wanting to go back to Kansas, where you sort of grew up, though in many different homes and locations, I guess my first assumption was that, okay, maybe, you know, the book is about you taking this one trip and all the things you discover. You, in fact, took, what, five trips or over the course of many summers, actually sort of going back and forth?
That's right. I went back five times, and I initially had not planned to go back that many times. I thought, oh, I'll take one trip back. I'll mm-hmm. revisit all the houses that I lived in as a child, and then I'll write something about that. I had no idea what it would become, and when I went back the first time, I was completely surprised to find that I fell in love with Kansas for the first time. I had grown up feeling very estranged from it. My family wasn't from there. They had landed there through a series of unfortunate incidents, and it was never by design that we ended up in Kansas. So I mm-hmm. kind of took on my own parents' discomfort with being there and had also internalized the sense that it's very common about the Midwest that it's not a very cool place to come from. So I didn't expect to have such strong feelings about it, but I really did fall in love with it when I went back, and I knew I needed to go back again.
I made
four more trips mm-hmm. after that first time.
Tell me, if you will, about the state motto to Kansas, because I found this very moving in your book.
Well, thanks. The state motto is Ad Astra Per Aspera, which means to the stars through difficulty. And it's a reflection of the state's sense of itself as a pioneer state where people are really tough. It's a tough climate. You know, Indiana, where you are, shares a lot of similar stories about the pioneer life and the hardships, and it was a sense that, you know, you reach the stars through difficulty. And interestingly enough, I never quite associated that with my family's own difficulties. There was a lot of family strife. There was a lot of moving around for reasons that weren't very happy. There was a lot of disruption in my childhood because of that. But I never made that connection to the difficulties in my own family. I thought somehow we never quite measured up to that pioneer motto. But it's both a powerful motto, and I think it's also a bit of a tough one.
Well,
you only reach the stars through suffering.
Your father, who is such a driving force throughout this memoir, in many ways, he was always trying to reach the stars, and that's what caused so much of the difficulties with your family.
That's right. He had ambitions to become an actor. And in my childhood, before he left when I was 12, that manifested itself in repeated attempts to go out to Hollywood and find work as an actor. It never succeeded. He also did a lot of community theater and melodramas with a resident company in Wichita. And it never really panned out for him. So it's a kind of a sad story. In many ways, he had ambitions that were never realized in his own life. And because of those ambitions, the family really suffered a lot. We went through a lot because of that.
Quite a large part of the sort of the middle part of the book deals with a lot of the research you've done. I mean, you are an English professor, you are an academic, and that comes through, but in a very approachable way. Tell me a bit about the research that you did, because there's so much interesting cultural history about Kansas and other areas, too, that's included in the book.
When I first started thinking about writing My Ruby Slippers, I wanted my story to really be part of a larger story. I think that all of us belong to larger stories, and especially because I was so interested in the idea of place. Every place has a lot of stories that aren't just ours. And so I started doing a lot of reading and research about other people in Kansas. I did a lot of reading about Native American cultures, particularly in the cities where I lived or the towns where I lived. I learned, because I did most of my growing up in Wichita, I spent a lot of time doing research on the Pawnee Indians and the Indians who were native to those places. So those are some of the stories that I unearthed were Native American tales. I also, in the book, retell some of the story of John Brown, who's such a powerful Kansas figure. I also tell the story of Allen Ginsberg, who had a rather dramatic and, contentious visit to Wichita, where I spent so many years, and he actually wrote a poem called Wichita Vortex Sutra as a kind of... not a poem of praise, but a poem of criticism about Wichita. So I incorporate a lot of stories besides my own into the book as a way of really getting to the many layers of stories that lay on the land and lay on every place that we live.
Tell me a bit about Matfield Green, if you would.
Sure. Matfield Green is a very small town, about 35 miles northeast of Wichita, and its population right now is about 69, and it's in a beautiful part of Kansas called the Flint Hills, which is where the original Tallgrass Prairie Preserve still is, and it's just gorgeous. It's hilly, it's green, there's a lot of tall grass. And I went to Matfield Green to spend 10 days or 2 weeks living there at the invitation of Wes Jackson, who runs a place called the Land Institute in Salina, Kansas, and they're doing a lot of agricultural research into trying to grow food crops that mimic the ecosystem of the prairie. And as part of their work, they're really interested in how can rural communities be sustained. And so they kind of have taken on Matfield Green as one of their test cases. And some folks are moving back there to try to rebuild community. Like so many small towns across the United States, Matfield Green was dying. So I was invited to go and stay there, and I just had a wonderful time. I was extremely drawn to the idea while I was there of actually moving back to Kansas, or at least being there part-time. So I toyed around with the idea or fantasized about buying up one of the little houses and fixing it up and having it as a place to come to in the summers and when I was on breaks and when I was on sabbatical from my teaching position. So it's a wonderful, beautiful little town, which is struggling to come back to life. Most of the old residents there are in their 80s and 90s, and it's typical of so many small towns across the United States where it's just really tough to hang on.
Mm-hmm. Now, your book it's part of a series called American Lives series. Tobias Wolf is the editor, University of Nebraska Press. Tell me a bit, though, about this American Lives series.
The American Lives series has been sponsored by Nebraska for some time. I'm not sure how many years they've done it. Tobias Wolf, of course, is the author of the wonderful book, A Boy's Life, and he's such a great iconic figure in American memoir writing. And Nebraska is a terrific press. About half of what they publish is not academic writing, it's trade writing, the trade books, the sort of things you might pick up at a bookstore and just take home to read for pleasure. And I knew that they were extremely supportive of the kind of book mine is, and that they also have that strong Midwestern connection. And so I approached them about publishing my book, and I'm just really very honored that they took it on for the American Lives series. There are many wonderful books published in that series, and I just feel myself to be very, very fortunate to be part of it.
Well, congratulations on that. You know, one thing I did want to mention that I know it's just kind of a side note in your book, but I really enjoyed reading about was about your grandfather. I'm a huge Marx Brothers fan.
Oh, you are, yeah.
And your grandfather was in the Marx Brothers film Day at the Races, and there's a great description of that scene. And it's my understanding, though, you never actually met your grandfather, right?
I never met my grandfather. He died when my father was still 18 or 19 years old, so he was never a presence in my life. But boy, he certainly had a strong, powerful presence in my father's life, and I think it's part of what drove his own acting ambitions was that my grandfather had been an actor.
Mm-hmm.
And the Marx Brothers movie that he's in, A Day at the Races, I think was his only really big film. It was his one big role. But I love watching that film and watching my grandfather because I see so many family resemblances to people who are alive now. And I feel that as a really strong connection to the past, even though I never had a chance to meet him.
What an amazing way to know your grandfather.
That's right.
Yeah. I mean, very intimate, but also disconnected, and you know, which in many ways goes back to, I mean, sort of how you describe your connection with home and place.
That's right. I think my story of a relationship to place and to the people who came before me in my own ancestral line is typical of so many Americans. We're very, very mobile as a culture. And now as I travel with the book, whose title is My Ruby Slippers, The Road Back to Kansas, so many people tell me similar stories of their own lives, mm-hmm. that they moved a lot, that they really don't feel connected to where they grew up, or some people have had a different address every year or two for 20 or 30 years. It's really amazing how much mobility is just simply part of American life. So part of that mobility, I think, comes with a heavy price, and often that price is missed connections or a lack of knowledge about our own family connections. I don't really know much about my family history beyond my grandparents' mm-hmm. generation. And, you know, there are places in the world where people can recite their lineage and talk about their family back centuries, so I think my story is very, very typical.
Well, Tracy, we're looking forward to you taking up residence in Indianapolis at least a little bit later this month when you're here for the book signing and author talk at Big Hat Books, and really looking forward to meeting you in person then.
Thank you very much, and I really look forward to sharing my ruby slippers with the folks in Indianapolis.
Travis DiNicola with author Tracy Seeley. Seeley is also a professor of English at the University of San Francisco. Her memoir, My Ruby Slippers, has just been published, and she'll be in Indianapolis on Sunday, June 26th, for a book signing starting at 4 o'clock at Big Hat Books in Broad Ripple.
Hey, Sharon.
Yes, Travis.
You know, last weekend our calendar was very focused on Father's Day. This weekend is Father's Day. So I'm thinking for those people who maybe are still a little bit last minute on this one.
What?
Yes, there could be
a few. I'm shocked.
We help people come up with some ideas of what to do with your dad on Father's Day on that calendar we call.
What do we do?
I see you've got a train brochure.
I know you are a big train guy, and mm-hmm. I know a lot of people's dads were train guys or grandpas, depending. And in fact, your lovely bride was on this trip. I recently had a chance to ride a train from the Indiana Transportation Museum, and there are all sorts of, which is in Fishers, mm-hmm. and there are all sorts of amazing trips that you can go on. You can get more information online about this, but here's something you might want to do for your dad and with your dad. You can take a one-hour trip called the Pizza Plus Express.
How fun.
It's an hour trip through Indiana farmland to Tipton. At Tipton, you can have dinner at your choice of restaurant, and that goes on alternating weekends, May through October. There's also dinner or a movie train, which takes you to a vintage 1920s movie theater, or you can have dinner, and those trips go on in June and July. There's much more going on, but if you've ever ridden the fare train, this is the train we're talking about, but you need to go up to the Indiana Transportation Museum and check it out, because there's lots more cool things to do with the train, with your dad.
That sounds like a great time. Something to do with dad.
Yeah.
Hey, if you're listening to us Friday night, then something you might want to consider doing on Saturday, because this is taking place actually all day Saturday, and wanted to let people know the summer solstice celebration at the IMA. And it actually does continue into Saturday evening with some things, but even though summer solstice isn't until later next week, they're celebrating at the IMA on Saturday, and it starts at 6:30 with yoga, and then there's a great freeze tag game that they're doing throughout the day, and honey taste testing and park tours and drumming circle, and they're doing stuff with the Align, the public artwork, out at the 100 Acres. With it, when the sun goes above it, that's going to be really cool. There's lots of different art making things, and also the Aphasia Dance Company from Belgium is performing twice at both 5 and 7 p.m. in the Toby on Saturday. So that's all taking place at the IMA all day on Saturday at the Toby. So if you're listening Friday night, take your dad. If you're listening Saturday, you can still get to go see the dance company in the Toby tonight.
And your dad doesn't have to be a hippy-dippy IDAC like I suggested on last weekend's calendar to go to a summer solstice celebration. Hey, maybe your dad is a jazz fan. Mm-hmm. On Father's Day this Sunday, give him a card and tell him you are going to go together on next Thursday, the 23rd, to the IUPUI Jazz Ensemble, which is going to play big band music and talk about the history of jazz and illustrate the history of jazz as part of the Indiana History Center's Concerts on the Canal series. That's Thursday, the 23rd. Great performers and a fun time. With dad or without.
Another jazz concert to plan for is with jazz pianist Dave Hepler. Now, I know, Sharon, you're going to have him on Art of the Matter next weekend to talk.
True.
But people can start planning now because he's going to be performing at the JCC on Sunday, June 26th at 2 p.m. And that should be a great concert. And listen for Dave's interview with Sharon next weekend.
Is your dad a salesman?
Not mine, but okay, let's say that he is.
If your dad likes to sell things, maybe your dad just sold you on the idea of getting a piggy bank and saving your dimes when you were a kid. Take him to see the great musical comedy piece about the greatest salesman of all time, the fast-talking Professor Harold Hill.
It's
a production of The Music Man, the great Meredith Willson piece. If you've never seen it live, you owe it to yourself to go see it. It is taking place as part of the Indiana Festival Theater season at Norvell Theater Center. This is a whole new series. You can get more information at theater.indiana.edu. It opens June 24th and goes through July 9th. There's Trouble in River City.
Trouble in River City. Ever since I had an interview with Kara Jean Wallers last summer, she's a great musician. I've had some people ask me about her. She's got another performance coming up actually next weekend, Friday the 24th, starting at 8 o'clock at the Outside Stage at Indie Hostel. It's the corner of 49th and Winthrop. And it should be really fun. She's going to be there with a lot of her friends. Evening of outdoor acoustic music. You can check out her website at Kara Jean Wallers. com for more information, or visit Indie Hostel, hostel.us to find out
Indie
more.
Hostile is something
not
completely different.
Yes, totally different.
Dad, I'm bored. Dad, I don't want to play outside. Dad, I'm tired of the computer. Dad, I'm bored. Help me do something fun. If you have children in your life saying this, children between the ages of 9 and 12.
That sounds awfully
hostile. Yeah, it does indeed. Mm-hmm. Boy, I have something fabulous for you to do with them. The Indiana State Museum is having a series of summer camps. Actually, I'm sorry, this one isn't open for grown-ups because this sounds pretty cool. It's a paleontology camp, fossils, mammoths, and more. It runs July 5th through the 8th. The registration deadline is coming up very quickly, so get online and check that out. Again, for ages 9 to 12, it's from 9 in the morning till 3 in the afternoon, and don't tell your kids, but they are going to learn a little something while they're having fun.
There you go.
Paleontology camp.
Woodruff Place Home Tour and Garden Tour is coming up next weekend as well. Perhaps you're down in Woodruff for their annual flea market. Well, every other year they do their home and garden tour, and it takes place June 25th and 26th, Windows of Woodruff, and it will feature 7 homes and 3 gardens. You can get more information at their website, which is located at woodruffplace.org.
If your dad likes history or likes medicine or both, here is a talk for him to go to, and maybe you're going to take him along. It's on Tuesday the 21st at 6:30 at the Indiana Medical History Museum. The talk is Notes on Nursing and Doctoring in the American Civil War. It's given by Jane Schultz, who's a professor of English at IUPUI, and she's done a lot of research on this, and what a fascinating topic. So that's June 21st, Notes on Nursing and Doctoring in the American Civil War at the Indiana Medical History Museum.
Awesome. And I want to make sure people know about the Idlejorg's Indian Market and Festival. It's their 19th annual Idlejorg Museum Indian Market and Festival, taking place next weekend. It starts on Friday with a preview party for members and also for the public. Tickets are still available for that, but then it's a little bit less expensive to go Saturday and Sunday for the regular Indian Market and Festival from 10 a.m. to 5 p.m. both days, with features tons of shopping and food and performances and educational activities, all very cool, outdoors at Military Park, right behind the Idlejorg and sort of on the grounds of the Idlejorg. Always a great, great weekend.
Maybe your dad is kind of handy and would like to build some furniture. Well, there's a Willow Workshop coming up at the Indianapolis Art Center. It's on July 23rd from 9 to 3. So, hey, sign yourself and your dad
Sounds
up for
awesome.
That. Something fun for the two of you to do together.
What a great idea. Yeah. And we'll be back next week with more ideas to do with Dad and Mom and the whole family.
And yourself
on that calendar we call
What Do We Do?
You're listening to The Art of the Matter, a weekly show about the arts in Indianapolis and Central Indiana. Your hosts are Sharon Gamble and Travis DiNicola. If your arts organization has an event or activity of which you think we should be aware, please contact us at least 3 weeks in advance. You can write us at The Art of the Matter, care of WFYI, 1630 North Meridian Street, Indianapolis, Indiana, 46202. Or you can email us at artofthematter@wfyi.org. You can also hear The Art of the Matter on WFYI.org.
Clues Memorial Hall of Butler University recently announced its 2011-2012 season, and Sharon Gamble wanted to learn more about it and about some new programming twists, so she invited Clues Community Relations Manager James Kramer in to tell us more.
So you're doing some new things at Clues Memorial Hall this year, but let's talk about the traditional season first. What are you calling it? Traditional season?
The traditional season is Clues Presents.
Clues Presents.
Yes. And interesting, because we don't think of it as traditional. Certainly the series is now, but the offerings are very eclectic, very I think that's what is traditional. We can count on it being a varied season. A little dance, a little music, a little spoken word, and we've got all of that this year. We've got six shows.
I thought of the old the vaudeville classic, A Little Song, A Little Dance, A Little Seltzer Down the Pants. Sorry.
I think I had
Groucho Marx in my ear or something like that. Well, really, the variety that you have does speak to that, all the way from Huey Lewis to Mike Birbiglia. But let's go in order.
Well, we launched the season in October, Saturday night. All of our shows this year are 8 o'clock. But alternate between Friday and Saturday nights. Mm-hmm. So Saturday night, October 8th, will be Esperanza Spalding, who was this year named as Grammy Award winner for Best New Artist. And she beat out the likes of Justin Bieber and Mumford and Son. So, but just for people to have a point of reference that says, okay, this is the you know, meaning of those kind of awards. Very often they all just sort of blend together. But in this case, it's quite an honor. And we were very pleased that we had already been speaking with the agent about her coming before we got the announcement she was even up for the award. So then this just kind of adds that little bit of credential to it for those.
And for people who aren't familiar with her. Mm-hmm.
Esperanza Spalding is new artist, but she's a jazz bassist as well as singer. And she does some other standards, too, as well as then a little bit of funk. And she's coming with a chamber music society, so it will not be just her on stage, which is very often our shows are a little small ensemble thing, if it's not a solo performer. So I think a nice blend between that and a full orchestra, having the chamber music there, is going to be just a really nice blend. And what I've heard is just amazing. I just didn't really know what to expect, but she is just a lovely, lovely voice, and just amazing what she does with the instruments. So that's going to be great to have her in, kicking off the season. And then we follow that with Huey Lewis and the News. As you mentioned, that's going to be Saturday night, October 22nd, which happens to be homecoming weekend at Butler as well. So we're hoping that, you know, that aligned with the 25th anniversary class, those kinds of things will be really great and exciting.
Yeah, a special shout out to people who graduated in the 80s, because that was like the...
Oh, yes.
the
apogee of Huey Lewis in the News. I mean, he still rocks, though.
Yes. It's that's going to be the heart of rock and roll. All in one evening.
All right, we'll stop before we start quoting too many lyrics here.
Okay.
You always have, and I know you have a special fondness for dance as a dancer. Tell us about the Luna Negra Dance Theater and Turtle Island Quartet.
Well, you know, they're coming down from Chicago. They're primarily a Latin dance form based company, modern company. And the fact that we're going to be having that with Turtle Island Quartet and live music, you know, dance, live music, sort of a rarity, expense, time, you know, rehearsal periods, just a variety of things.
Consistency of
that.
Rhythm.
Oh,
it's so much
sure.
easier to do it with a recording.
Oh, yes. And so many things, especially with contemporary work, is not your traditional music. It's oftentimes, you know, in some way been mixed in the studio,
right.
or it's electronic, or it's in some other way than what really is conducive to having a live, you know, accompaniment there.
Will the quartet be on stage with the dancers?
You know,
or will
that's
they
a good
be...
question. I'm not
Do we
sure.
know yet?
I'm not sure. What I understand of reading is there is a piece that that is specifically been choreographed with this in mind, so that it is more of like a club in Cuba. So that has that feeling. So I'm thinking it could be that it will be on stage in that. But I haven't seen any tech specs of where they are, you know, to be during performance and all. But definitely having that is going to be just, I think, just wonderful. I mean, just, you know, to have dance, but then to have live music just as a foundation for that is just an amazing experience for patrons to come. And you know, speaking personally, I think it's just a wonderful, wonderful opportunity to have that. And we're really featuring that in our outreach activities and all things we're doing. We're featuring dance music components to the speakers, to the activities we do, and things like that. And I'll tell you a little bit more about some of those activities.
Yeah, we're going to talk about some of those outreach activities
yes.
in a moment.
But I'll move on to the next thing on the series is Naturally 7, and that's on Friday, November 11th. So we have Naturally 7 on 11/11. So that's the way I'm remembering that, because you know, all these dates rolling around
right,
your
right.
head. But it is. Male a cappella group have been opening for Michael Bublé. So there's a little point of reference if people are looking at. And again, another as was Esperanza and Huey. Actually, the Naturally 7 is a Grammy Award winners as well. So it's a award-winning season from that standpoint. They'll be in doing their vocal wonders, and it's just...
And what kinds of music do they normally tackle?
You know, I think that kind of eclectic, but it's... jazzy, pop.
So kind of the King Singers territory, maybe a little more pop than King Singers, maybe more like... what's the really hot ensemble out of Bloomington?
Straight No Chaser.
Straight No Chaser.
Yes.
Yeah.
Along that line, you know, where there's the whole beatbox feel going in, and just you know, being the a cappella format of being it all.
Yeah.
You know, so it's sort of in contrast to Luna, where it's dance with music. This is music without the instruments.
Mm-hmm.
So there you go. It's really, I think, going to be a an amazing, and again, and listening to recordings of them, and all of this, of course, is, you know, available online in different places, but it's just some amazing things that people can do with the human voice.
Yeah.
It is just always blows me away that, you know, you keep thinking, oh, I've seen it, I've heard it all, and then you get one more, and you're like, well, no, I haven't. This is, yes.
Who knew?
Yes. We have what seems like a big gap, but we'll talk about that in a minute of why that is, but Bela Fleck and the Flecktones will be joining us. It's the original lineup, and that's going to be Friday, March 30th. And it's just going to be such a joy to have Bela back, because he's such a giving performer, artist, human being. He's was here a few years ago. We had him in the spring, in February, with the Africa Project.
Mm-hmm.
And it seemed like it was a little quick to have an artist back in that soon, because we do like to, when we, you know, have artists in that are popular, successful, and they're great to work with, we like to have them back.
Sure.
But we like to have enough time to put in other things.
Right,
so it's not
right.
just an annual thing. Well, because this is the Flecktones and the original lineup and the fact that there is enough of a gap in that from season to season, that we feel that it is time to have him back in. And so we're able to capitalize on the previous experience in some of these outreach activities that we're going to be doing.
And he does something, in my experience at Clues, that is not all that easy to do. You know, you have a big hall, but mm-hmm. he seems very conversational with the audience. He seems like he's really taking energy from the audience, as all performers mm-hmm. do, but mm-hmm. it seems like you're seeing him in a club where there's 50 people instead of 2,000 people.
And that is a really good point, Sharon. It is just an amazing venue that, even though it's large and you have this sea, this vast sea, uninterrupted, you know, with continental style seating of, mm-hmm. of humanity out there, you know, hopefully sell out crowd, that you can feel this very personal, intimate experience. I think the acoustics, certainly, the sight lines, you know, but the fact that a performer can sense the audience so well as to be conversational with them, whether it's in the, you know, planned performance or something improvised that, you know, just in conversation with. It really creates an environment that is so intimate and so personal. And you can say that, oh, you're experiencing it with 2,000 of your closest friends. But it really is that feeling. And I think that's an amazing feature that the hall, just the structure, the just the environment is created there to have that kind of experience.
And so, considering that it's 40, how many years old?
Yeah, approaching almost, 48, I
yeah,
think.
Yeah, getting
year,
close so getting, to 50.
Yes,
50.
We are.
Yeah.
And so that, I think, is a real plus for people who want to have that kind of feel, like you say,
yeah.
you know, it's a club feel in the auditorium setting.
Yeah.
So we finish up with a comedian, Mike Birbiglia. Some folks on the dial here know that.
Mm-hmm.
There are a couple of places on the dial that he appears as well, which mm-hmm. I find very interesting. So there's a great crossover between,
right.
you know, from Bob and Tom to FYI. I mean, we've got a wide range of listeners to this stand-up comic. He's going to be doing his show, My Girlfriend's Boyfriend. And so it's just going to be, it's, you know, so often you think, okay, what's in a title? Well, it kind of sums it up.
Yeah.
There you go. So this is
a
show.
It's a twisty road. What can I say?
So I think that's going to be a real fun way to finish out. That's on Saturday, April 28th. And again, those are just available in the season package right now, which some great benefits to being, you know, to savings, of course, a huge savings when you do subscriptions.
Mm-hmm.
But priority seating, ticket exchanges, VIP reception. Mm-hmm. So there are a variety of things that really make that more than just the ticket price. Certainly, you know, they're very affordable anyway. I think you can get, you know, probably average $21 per show if you get the whole series.
Yeah,
you know,
that's quite a steal.
Up depending on where you are. So
yeah.
you know, you can do a variety of things like that, and then of course you can always do the single tickets after we let the subscribers have their first picks in the fall. We'll open it up so that all the shows you can get your single tickets for those as well.
What's mm-hmm. going on in the hall between November and March?
Well, a little thing called Super Bowl, we hope.
Uh-huh.
That's kept out a couple weekends for us. You know, we're not going to be hosting necessarily the Super Bowl there, but we,
sure.
you know, if something needs to be downtown and a downtown venue needs to come and have a performing space, we've, you know, years ago when we were talking about hosting it, we all were asked to save dates.
Right.
So, and very well may, for instance, the symphony may come up and do a concert
sure.
there so that the circle could be available for other, you know, activities closer to the stadium.
Right.
So those kinds of things make it sort of shift around. So we've left a big chunk there, but we also have an alternative lineup that I want to tell you about. And this is not a series. It is a new model for us. We're trying a new lineup. Trying to think what, because it's not a series, so that people can get these shows and we can continue adding to them. We find that a lot of things, the old model of here's your series, here's your season, that's it, we don't ever add to it, is just that. It's an old model.
Right
now we have an opportunity mid-year. We've got time available in the calendar, perfect fit. Well, formerly we'd say, well, let's put it into next season.
Mm-hmm.
It's available now.
Right.
Let's get this act
Let's
into
do it.
This is timely. It's important. We have an opportunity. There it is. So it's an ongoing year-round type of model. So this alternative lineup called Clues Off Center, which is starts off with Hinson Alternative. puppeteers.
I love the description of this.
It's Stuffed it's and like... Unstrung is their title, and it really is adult puppet theater, if you will. I mean,
what if you just let them go and said you don't have to be child friendly.
Right, and it is actually very definitely. It is an adult only show because we're gonna they will accept ideas from the audience. Call it out. What do you want to see the puppets do?
Mm-hmm.
And as we know, that can go all over the map.
That can get naughty really fast.
It could be a lot of fun, but people know what they're coming in for. It is not right. is not a child puppet show, even though it is Henson Muppets.
Right.
You know, very well known, well respected, high quality of puppeteering, but to be able to do it as a stand up improv with the puppets. I mean, just how many more components could we add to that? I think it's just an amazingly fun evening in store there. And as again, that's Friday, September 30th. And then we go to the spring. This is sort of that fills in that gap a bit mm-hmm. with January. This is a Friday night, January 20th, and it's Street Drum Corps. It's three guys that do, a combination of different genres of music from sort of a grunge band, rock, punk, dance, techno, and it's just a raucous concert. So it's just going to be a lot of fun. A lot of, I think the Street Drum Corps comes from originally, a lot of the instruments they were playing were just things you'd find in the street.
Mm-hmm.
So not necessarily a traditional musical instrument.
The musical equivalent of found art.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah.
So I think it's great to hear that as opposed to seeing it. You know, certainly it's seen experience, but you know, in that example,
yeah.
I think it's great. And then another of those in-betweens is the February 24th. That's Friday, February 24th, Playing for Change. Again, you know, coming from the PBS documentary After Katrina, filming musicians, sharing that amongst other musicians, street musicians on the corners in New Orleans, and then going worldwide to have those musicians come together now and be that group playing for change and to have that live is going to be just an incredible opportunity.
Sharon Gamble with Clues Memorial Hall Community Relations Manager James Kramer. Learn more about their season at clueshall.org. That's CLOWES hall.org.
Thanks for joining us today. The music for today's show is courtesy of the Buscelli Wallerab Jazz Orchestra from their Heart and Soul album, available through Owl Studios at owlstudios.com.
Please listen to The Art of the Matter again next Friday at 8 p.m. and Saturday at 4 when I'll find out about the Star Gannett Jazz Foundation in Richmond, Indiana.
I'll get a preview of the Indianapolis Opera's new season and chat with Dave Hepler, who has a concert coming up.
And of course, we'll have our arts calendar we call
What'll We Do? So please listen next Friday at 8 and Saturday at 4 for The Art of the Matter here on WFYI for your information.
You've been listening to The Art of the Matter, made possible by the ongoing support of listeners like you and from the Palladium at the Center for the Performing Arts, presenting its inaugural season through June. The Art of the Matter. Your hosts are Sharon Gamble and Travis DiNicola. Today's Art of the Matter was produced and edited by Travis DiNicola. The Art of the Matter on 90.1 FM, Indianapolis.